I would like to say welcome to everyone today. It is God's Sabbath, and it is a time that we come before God, and it's a time that we come before Him to learn more about what He has to teach us, about His plan, and about Him and His Son, Jesus Christ. When we look around at the world that we live in today, if God and His Son chose not to intervene, we only have a short time to live upon the face of this earth. Because when we look around at the capability of man to bring about mass destruction, we know that it will happen. So that means that God either has to deliver a people or they will be completely annihilated from the face of this earth, and no life will be saved upon this earth. That's just a fact of life now. And that is the world that you and I live in. And when we look about what told us about is in the days of Noah, they didn't understand that imminent destruction was upon them. And I believe it was for 120 years that Noah spent. I'm sure they were mocking Noah about the task that he had undertook, because it had never rained in Noah's day. And so I'm pretty sure he was the butt of many jokes and many accusations, and I'm sure they had made a lot of fun of Noah. But they did not realize that imminent destruction was upon them. And it is the same today in the world that you and I live in. People hear the words about the weapons that are here that can annihilate every human being upon the face of this earth and every living creature upon this earth. But they really don't understand that it is imminent destruction unless the great God of this universe intervenes. And that is a fact. So at some point in time, God will have to make a distinction, and God will have to make a difference in His people, just as He did in the day of Moses. So God tells us that these things were written to you and me upon whom the end of the age has come. And all of these scriptures, once put together, paints you and I a picture down through time. And it paints us a picture of what God is doing and how He is doing it. And that's why you come together on God's Sabbath and His holy days. Because it is the present truth that enlightens you and me as to where God is leading us. And either you believe this is God's church and God is leading His church, or either you don't. But God does paint us a picture, whether you believe it or not. And it doesn't really make a difference, because God has a plan for man down through time. And He has a great white throne for those that don't believe now, unless the unpardonable sin has been done against God and His Son. So it doesn't really matter at this time. But God does say that there will be some alive when Jesus Christ returns to this earth, and that Jesus Christ will return to stop man from annihilating himself. And if He didn't choose to do so, imminent destruction would come about, brother. And with that in mind, let's go over to the book of Exodus, and we'll pick up the story where God was delivering the people back in Moses' day. And let's pick up the story in Exodus 3 and verse 1 and see what we can learn and what we can apply to our lives, to His church at the end time, upon whom the end of the age has come, when God will have to make a difference once again. He made a difference in Moses' day. And he will make a difference at the end of this age, brother. And that's your title today for the sermon. Make a difference. And God will bring it about. Exodus 3 and verse 1 we find, "Now Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the back of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. And the angel of the Eternal appeared to him in a flame of fire from the midst of a bush. So he looked, and behold, the bush was burning with fire, but the bush was not consumed. Then Moses said, 'I will turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush does not burn.' So when the Eternal saw that he turned aside to look, God called to him from the midst of the bush and said, 'Moses, Moses.' And Moses said, 'Here I am.' And then he said, 'Do not draw near this place. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place where you stand is holy ground.' Moreover, he said, 'I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob.' And he is our God also, brother. It's the same God that spoke to Moses. And either you believe this is God's church, or either you don't. But it is the same God that spoke to Moses. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. And the Eternal said, 'I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt.'" And we know the symbolism between Egypt and what it pictures. God's church has been teaching this down through time, the symbolism and the picture that it paints for you and I, especially during the days of unleavened bread and coming out of Egypt, coming out of sin, and talking about deliverance from a system, a corrupt system, man's system. And Pharaoh is likened to Satan and Satan's world. And it likens you and me to being in captivity. And we are. We are in bondage. We are in a system that is not God's system. But God is going to make a difference in the near future. And that's what you and I look forward to. And the Eternal said, "I have surely seen the oppression of my people." And he sees it now, brother. He sees how we are oppressed. "And he has heard their cry because of their taskmasters. And he hears our cries too, brother. Our deliverance cannot come fast enough for most of us. Most of us realize what this means, this deliverance. And it is just as in their day, God told them to bring them up from that land to a good and large land, to a land flowing with milk and honey. And it's symbolic of what will happen when Jesus Christ returns. It will be the beginning of a new creation, of a new world, a new land. And it likens it to flowing with milk and honey because of what will begin to take place to prepare this earth for 1,000 years. To make this earth to once again to become like the Garden of Eden by the time the great white throne gets here. And it paints us a beautiful picture. One that you and I look so forward to being here in reality. We only live by faith now. Verse 9. "Now therefore, behold, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me. And I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them." And God sees it for you and me too, brother. It says, come now, therefore, and I will send you the Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt, spiritual Egypt. And when we understand the meaning of Egypt in our time, and that it pictures what you and I and the whole world is captive of, this system, Satan's system, we look forward to God delivering us out of this system and bringing us into His government, God's government, a just government upon the face of this earth for all people, to deliver all of us from their oppression. Verse 11, Moses said to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? We know the story about Moses, and we know how he was put in a basket and he was raised in the palace. And we know about how he slew the Egyptian. And I'm sure this was on his mind when God told him these words, that he was going to send him back to Pharaoh. And Moses had fled for his life. And so Moses is saying, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, that I should bring the children of Israel out of Egypt? Why me, in other words? And I can ask the same question of you. Why are you here? Verse 12. So he said, I will certainly be with you. That's what God is telling him. And do we believe God is with us? God called you, opened your mind to the most awesome plan upon the face of this earth, brother. And this shall be a sign to you that I have sent you when you have brought the people out of Egypt. You shall serve God on this mountain. And Moses said to God, indeed, when I come to the children of Israel and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you. And they say to me, what is his name? What will I say to them? And God said to Moses, I am who I am. And he said, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, I am, has sent me to you. And it's the same at the end of this age. I am has sent some to the church of God at the end of this age to deliver a people and to make a difference upon this earth. We only have a short time to wait. Verse 15. Moreover, God said to Moses, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, the Lord God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever. So, I am has sent to at the end of an age. Just like he did then, to deliver a people. And this is my memorial to all generations. And then verse 16, go and gather the elders of Israel together and say to them, the eternal God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, appeared to me saying, I have surely visited you and seen what is done to you in Egypt. And God sees what's done to you and me in Egypt, in our captivity. Though, granted, we have a little more freedom than they did, but be assured we are in captivity to this system. And I have, and I will bring you out of the affliction of Egypt to the land of the Canaanites, the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites and the Hivites and the Jebusites, to a land flowing with milk and honey. Then they will heed your voice. And you shall come, you and the elders of Israel, to the king of Egypt. And you will say to him. So God is giving instructions. And the eternal God of the Hebrews has met with us, and now please let us go 3 days' journey into the wilderness. God's telling them what to say. That we may sacrifice to the eternal our God. And let's notice verse 19. It's a very important verse. It's very important how you view what is being said and how it will be brought about. But I am sure that the king of Egypt will not let you go. God told them here. No, not even by a mighty hand. So I will stretch out my hand and strike Egypt with all my wonders, which I will do in its midst. And after that, he will let you go. So let's pay attention to what and how God is telling them it will take place. And I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. And it will be when you go that you will not go out empty-handed. But everyone will ask of her neighbor, namely of her who dwells near her house, articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. And you shall put them on your sons and on your daughters. So you will plunder the Egyptians. And we know the story. We know that this took place. Exodus 4. In verse 1. And it says, miraculous signs for Pharaoh. Then Moses answered and said, but suppose they will not believe me or listen to my voice. Suppose they say the Eternal has not appeared to you. So the Eternal said to him, what is that in your hand? And Moses said, a rod. And he said, cast it on the ground. God told him. So Moses cast it on the ground and it became a serpent. And let's notice, Moses fled from it. I don't imagine it was like a little green snake that rod turned into. I would imagine that it was the most ferocious snake that Moses had ever seen. I just think that this is what God would have done. And let's notice what God told Moses. Reach out your hand and take it by the tail. Now, I'm sure this thing was spitting and sputtering on that ground. And anyone that knows anything about snakes is you don't pick them up by the tail. So, most dangerous place to pick a snake up. You always pick them up behind the head where they can't strike you. But here God is telling Moses to pick him up by the tail. It's a pretty tall order when that snake is sitting there spitting and looking at you. And Moses reached out his hand and caught it. Took a lot of fortitude just to do that. So Moses had to really trust God to reach down and grab that snake by that tail. And we can see that it became a rod again in Moses' hand. So pretty awesome event. And it was done for a reason. It was done for Moses to strengthen him. To know who he was dealing with, the great God of this universe. And Moses was learning some trust here. It took a lot of trust to reach down and pick that snake up by the tail. Sometimes we just read through these scriptures and we don't really grasp what is actually taking place. And we can see that Moses had fear because he ran. and that snake. Now, if that snake was just a docile little green snake, I don't think Moses would have ran from it. But I don't think that was the type of snake that it was. I think it was a very ferocious snake that rod turned into, that God created from that rod. Verse 5. That they may believe that the eternal God of their fathers, the God of Abraham. Let's notice what's being said. The God of Isaac and the God of Jacob has appeared to you. Furthermore, the eternal said to him, now put your hand in your bosom. And he put his hand in his bosom. And when he took it out, behold, his hand was leprous, like snow. And he said, put your hand in your bosom again. So he put it in his bosom again and drew it out. And behold, it was restored like his other flesh. Then it will be, if they do not believe you, nor heed the message of the first sign, that they may believe the message of the latter sign. And it shall be, if they do not believe even these two signs or listen to your voice, that you shall take water from the river and pour it on the dry ground. And the water which you take from the river will become blood upon the dry land. And the Eternal said to Aaron, let's drop down to Exodus 4 and verse 27, let's drop down. That's where we find this. And the Eternal said to Aaron, go into the wilderness to meet Moses. So he went and met him on the mountain of God and greeted Moses and kissed him. So Moses told Aaron all the words of the Eternal who had sent him, and all the signs which he had commanded him. Then Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all the elders of the children of Israel. And Aaron spoke all the words which the Eternal had spoken to Moses. And then he did the signs in the sight of the people. So Moses threw that rod on the ground and it became that ferocious snake. Put his hand in his bosom and it became leprous. And then it returned to its normal state. So we see that Moses showed him the signs that God had given him to go before Pharaoh. And let's notice verse 31. The people believed. And when they heard that the Eternal had visited the children of Israel and that God had looked upon their affliction, then they bowed their heads and worshipped. In Exodus 5 and verse 1, it's the first encounter with Pharaoh from Moses and Aaron. And this has a very significant effect upon the people because of the way it went down and because of what took place. And we'll read through this account and we'll see how it actually took place. And we'll focus on some of the events as it was happening. And it says, Moses and Aaron went in and told Pharaoh, thus says the Eternal God of Israel, let my people go, that they may hold a feast to me in the wilderness. And Pharaoh said, who is the Eternal that I should obey his voice to let Israel go? The question that was asked to Moses and Aaron. And Pharaoh said, I don't know the Eternal, and I will not let Israel go. So they said, the God of the Hebrews has met with us. So you can imagine how this sounded to Pharaoh. I can just imagine what he thought. He probably thought they were nuts and they had just lost their mind. But they said, they did what God said, do. And they said, please, let us go 3 days' journey into the desert and sacrifice to the eternal our God, lest he fall upon us with pestilence or with the sword. So you can imagine what Pharaoh thought. What kind of God are they talking about? You know, that he would fall upon them with, fall upon us with pestilence and with the sword. Then the king of Egypt said to them, Moses and Aaron, why do you take the people from their work? In other words, they working, and here you are wanting them to go into the desert to do some stupid thing. That's what he thought. He said, go back to your labor. In other words, go back to work. Pharaoh said, look, the people of the land are many now, and you want to take them from working and let them rest from their labor. So the same day, Pharaoh commanded the taskmasters of the people in their offices, saying, you shall no longer give the people straw to make brick as before. So Pharaoh didn't really take kindly to what Moses and Aaron had done. And he said, let them go and gather straw for themselves. And you shall lay on them the quota of bricks which they made before. And you will not reduce it. In other words, if they got time to go in the desert and take time off, it means that they're idle. And therefore they're crying out. Just notice what's being said. Let us go and sacrifice to our God. We want to take time off and do this. Let more work be laid upon them, that they may labor in it, and let them not regard false words. That's what he thought. False words. Lying words. Verse 10, and the taskmasters of the people and their officers went out and spoke to the people, saying, thus says Pharaoh, I will not give you straw. So, we can see that they were going to have to make bricks now and gather the straw also. And he said, go get yourself straw where you can find it, yet none of your work will be reduced. So the people were scattered abroad throughout all the land of Egypt to gather stubble instead of straw. And the taskmasters forced them to hurry, saying, fulfill your work, your daily quota is when there was straw. So it's just about like us in the church of God. It's not as easy as it was in the past. You've been persecuted. And the analogy is very appropriate for our time because it's harder on everyone. The circumstances are not easy. And it is like making brick without straw in the age that we find ourselves in, with the oppressions and the persecutions and the ridicule and the mocking that takes place against God's people. Your jobs, your family, maybe your wife or your husband, and you feel just as you are making your bricks without the straw. And it's a little harder than it was in the past. It's not like the days of Philadelphia, the days of brotherly love. It was relatively easy during those days. to keep God's laws and to go to church, have a good time, have the ball games, the singing. All those things are gone. It's a little harder. We don't even have the means to sing together anymore, much less a ball game. So it is a little different, and it is like making brick without straw in our time. Verse 14. Also the officers of the children of Israel, whom Pharaoh's taskmasters had set over them, were beaten and were asked, "Why have you not fulfilled your task in making brick both yesterday and today as before?" So we can see that Pharaoh made it hard on the people. And so we find ourselves at the end of an age, where Satan has been allowed to lash out at God's church. And we need to understand that we are in a spiritual war of a magnitude I know that we don't understand. But the analogy is the same. And it is like making brick without straw. And it is a little harder. And let's notice what took place. Then the officers of the children of Israel came and cried out to Pharaoh, saying, so here are the people that were in charge that the taskmasters used to control the people. And they were going to Pharaoh saying, why are you dealing thus with your servants? Why are you doing this? There is no straw given to your servants. And they say to us, make bread. It's the same for you and me. We're making bread. And it is without straw. And indeed, your servants are beaten. And you and I take a beating too in this world because of what we believe. Because we believe that God is leading this church. And it doesn't fit well in Satan's world. Granted, most of it is spiritual in our day and time. But the analogies are the same. It was physical in their time. And it's a spiritual war in our time. And we are in battles. And there are casualties when you're in a war. But the fault, the rest of the verse, and indeed your servants are beaten. But the fault is in your own people. But he said, you are idle, idle. That's what he claimed. Therefore you say, let us go and sacrifice to the Eternal. Therefore go now and work, for no straw will be given you. Yet you shall deliver the quota of bricks. So brethren, don't expect any straw for your bricks at the end of this age. There will no straw be given to you and me until it's over. Verse 19. And the officers of the children of Israel saw that they were in trouble after it was said, you shall not reduce any bricks from your daily quota. So you and I need to recognize where we are in time. And we need to recognize that we're in trouble if God does not intervene in this system, in this world. And if he does not, you and I will make brick without straw until we die. It's just a reality. Verse 20. Then as they came out from Pharaoh, they met Moses and Aaron. who was standing there to meet them. And let's notice what took place. And they said to them, talking about to Moses and Aaron, "Let the Eternal look down upon you and judge." This is not nice words that they were saying, brother. Because, let's notice, it's accusations. "Because you have made us abhorrent in the sight of Pharaoh, in the sight of his servants, to put a sword in their hand to kill us." That's what they told Moses and Aaron. Because they had went before Pharaoh, and this is what had taken place, they knew they were in trouble. And they thought that they would have to die from those taskmasters. That's what they thought. Thought they would be killed. And so they were blaming this on Moses and Aaron, who had done exactly what God told them to do. He had went before Pharaoh and told the words of God to Pharaoh. And this is what took place. They were making their bricks without straw. Verse 22. "You and I have been told that Jesus Christ is returning to this earth. And this system has you and me making bricks without straw. But we know at some point in time that God will make a difference. And he will make a move to deliver his people once again. Just like he did in the days of Moses, brother." Verse 22. Let's notice what Moses said to God. Moses returned to the Eternal and said, "Lord, why have you brought trouble upon this people?" And we can apply that to our day. Why have the things happened to us the way they did? It's not exactly the way that you and I thought it would come about. And I can assure you, the reason that Moses was going back before God is because it didn't happen the way he thought it would happen. So Moses is going back before God and asking God, "Why have you brought this trouble upon this people?" And let's notice what else is it. "Why have you sent me? Why did you send me to Pharaoh to tell him this?" Verse 23. "For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people." And it's the same for the church of God at the end, brother. After their apostasy, after God awakened his people, we've had nothing but evil done to our church, God's church. It's just the way it is. It's a sick, sick world. It's a government that is in charge. This Assyria that has captured God's people in captivity. You must notice the rest. "Neither have you delivered your people at all." So, we can see an event, the very first event that took place. Moses didn't look good in the eyes of the people. And Moses went back to God and said, "Neither have you delivered your people at all." But we remembered what God told Moses at the beginning of how it was to be done. But sometimes we don't see all of this until God reveals it as we go through his plan. God had a plan to deliver his people. Now, I think it's fair to say at this first stage that it looked kind of bad for Moses. He had done his job just the way God said, do it. And here he was before the people, and they were not very happy with Moses. And they're not very happy with us at the end of this age either, brother. We've been telling that Jesus Christ is returning to this earth. And we don't always look good. But either you believe God is leading this church or either you don't. So we know that God cannot lie. So what took place that Moses had to go back before God and ask these questions? Moses went back and asked where. And he told God, neither have you delivered your people at all. So it didn't happen exactly the way that Moses thought it should happen. Not that it was not going to happen. It just didn't happen the way that Moses thought it should happen. So Moses was questioning God. Let's notice Exodus 6. In verse 1. Then the Eternal said to Moses, now you will see what I will do to Pharaoh. For with a strong hand he will let them go. And with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land. And God spoke to Moses and said to him, I am the Eternal. I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob as God Almighty. But by my name, Lord, I was not known to them. I have also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land of their pilgrimage, in which they were strangers. And I have also heard the groaning of the children of Israel, who the Egyptians keep in bondage. And I have remembered my covenant. Brethren, God has not forgot his promise. Events may not happen the way that you and I have in our mind, the way that we think they should happen. But God says he's heard the groaning. He's heard ours. He knows our plight. He knows our suffering. And he knows our bondage to this system. Just like he did theirs. And God said he had remembered his covenant with them and with us. It's the same. Therefore say to the children of Israel, I am the Eternal. I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will rescue you from their bondage, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. And he will do that at the end of an age. And it paints us a picture of how God did it in the beginning with Moses. And it gives us understanding of how God works. And he says, I will take you as my people and I will be your God. And we know when that will be for them. And he says, then you will know that I am the Eternal, your God, who brings you out from under the burden of the Egyptians. And they would in a physical sense. We know the story. We know God did what he said he would do. And I will bring you into the land which I have swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I will give it to you as a heritage. I am the Eternal. So Moses spoke this to the children of Israel. But let's notice, they were not happy with Moses. And they did not heed Moses. In other words, they wouldn't listen. Because of anguish of spirit in cruel bondage. The physical things that had been done to him. And there's God had told them through Moses that he was going to deliver them. So now we find that their spirit was in anguish. And that was against Moses and probably against God. Verse 10. The Eternal spoke to Moses saying, go in, tell Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to let the children of Israel go out of his land. And Moses spoke before the Eternal, saying, the children of Israel have not heeded me. So Moses is going back and telling God that they're not listening anymore. How then shall Pharaoh heed me? Why should Pharaoh listen to me? The children, my own people, won't even listen to me now. Look pretty bad for Moses. For I am of uncircumcised lips. Another translation says, Moses spoke before the Eternal, saying, behold, the sons of Israel have not listened to me. How then will Pharaoh listen to me? For I am unskilled in speech. In other words, he was not a good orator. He was not, he knew he was not convincing. He didn't have the skills to go before Pharaoh and convince him. Then the Eternal spoke to Moses and Aaron and gave them a command for the children of Israel and for Pharaoh, king of Egypt, to bring the children of Israel out of the land of Egypt. So we can see the first plague, where the waters become blood. In the second plague, we see the plague of the frogs. Exodus 8 and verse 16. The third plague, lice. And this is where we want to begin focusing on this third plague and beyond. So the Eternal said to Moses, say to Aaron, stretch out your rod and strike the dust of the land, so that it may become lice throughout all the land of Egypt. And they did so. For Aaron stretched out his hand with his rod and struck the dust of the earth, and it became lice on man and beast. All the dust of the land became lice throughout all the land of Egypt. Can you imagine? Can you imagine living with all those lice all over you? And all over all the animals. Verse 18, we can see things beginning to change. There was something that was beginning to make a difference. And it said the magicians so worked with their enchantments to bring forth lice. But they could not. They had duplicated some of the early things, as we know. But now, they cannot. So there were lice on man and beast. And the magician said to Pharaoh, let's notice, something was changing. This is the finger of God. But Pharaoh's heart grew hard. And he did not heed them, just as the Eternal had said. So things were beginning to change. And it will begin to change for you and me, upon whom the end of the age has come, brother. God will make a difference. Verse 20. We find the fourth plague, flies. The Eternal said to Moses, rise early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh as he comes out to the water. Then they said to him, thus says the Eternal, let my people go, that they may serve me. Or else, if you will not let my people go, behold, I will send swarms of flies upon you and your servants, and on your people and into your houses. The houses of the Egyptians will be full of swarms of flies, and also the ground on which they stand. In verse 22, let's notice, God is making a difference. And in that day, I will set apart the land of Goshen. So God is beginning to make his move for the people in which my people dwell, that no swarms of flies will be there, in order that you may know that I am the Eternal in the midst of the land. So it will begin to be so in our time at the end of this age. God will make a difference. Verse 23. I will make a difference between my people and your people. And God will do the same at the end of an age. Tomorrow this sign will be, and the Eternal did so. Thick swarms of flies came into the house of Pharaoh, into his servants' houses, and into all the land of Egypt. The land was corrupted because of the swarms of flies. And Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron and said, go sacrifice to your God in the land. Moses said, let's notice how it was said. Let's back up a little bit. In the land. In other words, he wasn't letting them go. But he was going to let them sacrifice to their God. He was agreeing to that. Moses said, it is not right to do so, for we would be sacrificing the abomination of the Egyptians to the Eternal our God. If we sacrifice the abomination of the Egyptians before their eyes, then will they not stone us? It was a clash in their religion and what they believed, in the gods that they worshiped, in the God that Moses worshiped. And so Moses was telling him, they'd be ready to stone us if we did this in the land. And Moses said, we will go 3 days' journey into the wilderness and sacrifice to the Eternal our God, as he will command us. We'll do it God's way. So Pharaoh said, I will let you go that you may sacrifice to the Eternal your God in the wilderness, only you shall not go very far away. Intercede for me. In other words, he's asking Moses to compromise and to go before his God and compromise with him. Verse 29. Moses said, indeed, I am going out from you, and I will entreat the Eternal that the swarms of flies may depart tomorrow from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people. But let Pharaoh not deal deceitfully any more, not letting the people go to sacrifice to the Eternal. So Moses went out from Pharaoh and entreated the Eternal. And the Eternal did according to the word of Moses. He removed the swarms of flies from Pharaoh, from his servants, and from his people. Not one remained. But Pharaoh hardened his heart at this time also, neither would he let the people go. So it still looked bad for Moses. Well, sure, Moses was before the people. And they were watching this, and all they were seeing was plague after plague, but had their attention a little bit now because they wasn't being affected. This was just happening to the Egyptians. God had made a difference. Exodus 9 and verse 1. The livestock diseased. The fifth plague. Then the Eternal said to Moses, go into Pharaoh and tell him, thus says the Eternal God of the Hebrews, let my people go that they may serve me. For if you refuse to let them go and still hold them, behold, the hand of the Eternal will be on your cattle in the field, on the horses, the donkeys, the camels, the oxen, the sheep, a very severe pestilence. And let's notice verse 4. And the Eternal will make a difference between the livestock of Israel and the livestock of Egypt. So nothing shall die of all that belongs to the children of Israel. Protection. Then the Eternal appointed us that time, saying, tomorrow the Eternal will do this thing in the land. So the Eternal did this thing on the next day. And all the livestock of Egypt died, but of the livestock of the children of Israel, not one died. God made a difference. And he will do so at the end of an age. There's a lot of death coming upon this earth. And you definitely will want to be close to your God when the destruction starts. Pharaoh's, then verse 7. Then Pharaoh said, indeed, not even one of the livestock of the Israelites was dead. But the heart of Pharaoh became hard, and he did not let the people go. So, we can look at these parallels and even though it was hard on the people that were in captivity, they were beginning to see the sufferings of the Egyptians. And as we live through some of this at the end of this age, God will begin to make a difference. And we will begin to see their suffering is a lot worse than ours. Because God will offer protection to those that he has called to live into a new age. The 144,000 doesn't matter whether they live or die. But there are some that are called to live into a new age that God will have to protect just as he did them. And God will have to make a difference to bring this about, brother. And I hope you understand what you have been offered to live into the most wonderful time on the face of this earth, when all of mankind will be led out of captivity, out of spiritual Egypt, out of Assyria, out of the oppression of the governments, and a just government set up upon the face of this earth for all of mankind. All of the religions of this world will be done away with. And only the truth will be taught. Granted, it will take some time. Mr. Armstrong used to say 3 or 4 generations. But it will make a difference. It will make a big difference in the way man lives. And man will learn the way of peace. All wars will be stopped. Peace will begin to reign around this earth. So I hope you understand, brother, those that have been called to live into a new age. Doesn't mean the oppression won't be here. Don't mean that you won't be making brick without straw. It'll be hard. But you have to look on the horizon and stay close to your God. Things don't always happen the way we think they should happen, just as we could see with Moses and Aaron. That's why they went before God. It didn't happen like they thought, but it was happening just the way that God said it would happen. Verse 8, the sixth plague, boils. The Eternal said to Moses and Aaron, take for yourselves handfuls of ashes from a furnace and let Moses scatter it toward the heavens in the sight of Pharaoh. And it will become fine dust in all the land of Egypt, or called boils that break out in sores on man and beast throughout all the land of Egypt. And it will cause boils that break out in sores on man and beast throughout all the land of Egypt. And then they took ashes from the furnace and stood before Pharaoh, and Moses scattered them toward heaven. They caused boils that break out in sores on man and beast. And the magicians could not stand before Moses, that's Moses, because of the boils. For the boils were on the magicians and on all the Egyptians. But the Eternal hardened the heart of Pharaoh, and he did not heed them, just as the Eternal had spoken to Moses. Then the Eternal said to Moses, "Rise early in the morning and stand before Pharaoh and say to him, 'Thus says the Eternal God of the Hebrews.' Don't you know Pharaoh was getting tired of hearing this from Moses? Can you imagine the anger and the disgust he had of seeing Moses? They hate us too, brother. We're not this world's favorite people. And Moses and Aaron were not Pharaoh's favorite people. But as we go through this, we'll see God makes a difference as these plagues take place. Thus say the Lord God of the Hebrews, 'Let my people go, that they may serve me. For at this time I will send all my plagues to your very heart, and on your servants, and on your people, that you may that there is none like me in all the earth. Now if I had stretched out my hands and struck you and your people with pestilence, then you would have been cut off from the earth.'" In other words, they'd have been annihilated, brother. They'd just been done away with. That's all God had to do, and he was letting them know it through Moses. But indeed, let's notice what he told him. "But indeed, for this purpose, I have raised you up, that I may show my power in you." Some powerful words that was said to Pharaoh. "And that my name may be declared in all the earth." Can you imagine Moses telling Pharaoh that God was using him just to show his power and how powerful a God he was? I can imagine that that angered Pharaoh even more to hear these words coming out of Moses' mouth. "As yet you exalt yourself against my people." Just notice what's being told to you. "In that you will not let them go. Behold, tomorrow about this time, I will cause very heavy hail to rain down, such as not been in Egypt since its founding until now." In other words, it's never happened before that. "Therefore, send now and gather your livestock and all that you have in the field, for the hail will come down on every man and every animal which is found in the field and is not brought home, and they will die." That's what's being told. Now let's notice in verse 20. Something was happening. Something was making a difference. "He who feared the word of the Eternal among the servants of Pharaoh made his servants and his livestock flee to the houses. But he who did not regard the word of the Eternal left his servants and his livestock in the field." Then the Eternal said to Moses, "Stretch out your hand toward heaven that they may be hailed in all the land of Egypt, on man, beast, and every herb of the field throughout the land of Egypt." And Moses stretched out his rod toward heaven, and the Eternal sent thunder and hail and fire darted, talking about lightning, to the ground. And the eternal rained hail on the land of Egypt. So there was hail and fire mingled with the hail, talking about lightning. So very heavy that there were none like it in all the land of Egypt since it became a nation. So it's pretty massive destruction, brother. And you and I know that if God doesn't deliver us and the people of this earth, that there won't be anything left. And the hail struck throughout the whole land of Egypt, all that was in the field, both man and beast. And the hail struck every herb of the field and broke every tree of the field. Verse 26, let's notice. Only in the land of Goshen, where the children of Israel were, there was no hail. God had made a difference, brother. And Pharaoh sent and called for Moses and Aaron and said to them, I have sinned this time. The Eternal is righteous and my people and I are wicked. Entreat the Eternal that there be no more mighty thunders and hail, for it is enough. I will let you go and you shall stay no longer. So Moses said to him, as soon as I have gone out of the city, I will spread out my hands to the Eternal. The thunder will cease and there will be no more hail, that you may know that the earth is the Eternal's. But as for you and your servants, I know that you will not yet fear the Lord God. Now the flax and the barley were struck, for the barley was in the head and the flax was in the bud. But the wheat and the spelt were not struck, for they are late crops. So Moses went out of the city from Pharaoh and spread out his hands to the Eternal. Then the thunder and the hail ceased, and the rain was not poured out on the earth. And when Pharaoh saw that the rain, the hail, and the thunder had ceased, he sinned yet more. And he hardened his heart, he and his servants. So the heart of Pharaoh was hard. Neither would he let the children of Israel go, as the Eternal had spoken by Moses. In Exodus 10, in verse 1, the eighth plague, locust. And the Eternal said to Moses, go to Pharaoh, for I have hardened his heart and the heart of his servants, that I may show these signs of mine before him, that you may tell in the hearing of your son and your son's sons the mighty things I have done in Egypt, in my signs which I have done among them, that you may know that I am the Eternal. And we're reading it today, brother. It says your sons and your son's son about the mighty things that God did. And it tells us so that we may know that there is a God. And he is a great God. And he is a God that does not lie. And he is telling us that he will deliver a people just as he delivered them, ancient Israel, in Moses' day. And it tells why it was done. Because it paints a picture for you and me, upon whom the end of the age has come. God tells us that he will make a difference. And if God did not make a difference for those that are called to live until the millennium, there would no place be saved. Because man would annihilate himself. Verse 3. So Moses and Aaron came into Pharaoh and said to him, thus says the Eternal God of the Hebrews, how long will you refuse to humble yourself before me? Let my people go that they may serve me. Or else if you refuse to let my people go, behold, tomorrow I'll bring locusts into your territory. They will cover the face of the earth. so that none will be able to see the earth, and they will eat the residue of what is left, which remains to you from the hail, and they shall eat every tree which grows up for you out of the field. They will fill your houses, the house of your servants, the houses of all the Egyptians, which neither your fathers nor your fathers' fathers have seen, since the day that they were on the earth to this day. So it was going to be massive. And he turned and went out from Pharaoh. Then Pharaoh's servant said to him, "How long shall this man be a snare to us? Let the men go, that they may serve the eternal their God. Do you not know that Egypt is destroyed? And it will be the same when God's plan is over." Egypt pictures coming out of sin, coming out of captivity, coming out of Assyria. And when God's plan is finalized, those that will be there will be completely free of Egypt. They will be fully atoned to the great God of this universe and his Son, Jesus Christ. And it is a beautiful picture of how it's done. But right now, you and I are living it at the end of this age. The children of Israel lived it in their day. And now it's our turn. And we are living it. And we are persecuted. And we are in Assyria. And we are in Egypt. But we are coming out of Egypt just as they were. Coming out of the oppression of Assyria. Do you not know that Egypt is destroyed? When we look at on the world scene, just because it hadn't happened, do we not know that this world is destroying? Nobody's just pushed the button yet, brother. But it's a done deal. We have so many nuclear weapons that once that button is pushed, we're destroyed. We're destroyed now. Just like Egypt was destroyed. Just hadn't happened yet. Egypt was destroyed the first time that Moses went to Pharaoh. God knew it would happen then. So it was as good as destroyed. This world is as good as destroyed. God said he would destroy it and set up his kingdom upon this earth. The button just hadn't been pushed yet. Now, we can argue which buttons have been pushed. But when we look back, it's just like Daniel. We can always tell where we are. Do you not know that Egypt is destroyed? Do we not know? Do we not know that this world is destroyed? Satan's world? Do we not know that there is a people that will be prepared to live into the millennium? To start a new age? A new world? Verse 8. So Moses and Aaron were brought again to Pharaoh, and he said to them, "Go serve the eternal your God. Who are the ones that are going?" Moses said, "We will go with our young and our old, with our sons and our daughters, with our flocks and our herds, we will go. For we must hold a feast to the Eternal." Then he said to them, "The Eternal had better be with you." Let's notice the threat. Talking about Pharaoh. So notice what he said to Moses, "The Eternal had better be with you when I let you and your little ones go. Beware, for evil is ahead of you." In other words, Pharaoh was threatening him now. "Not so, go." So notice what he's telling him. Go now, you who are men, and serve the eternal, for that is what you desired. And they were driven out from Pharaoh's presence. In other words, they were escorted out pretty harshly. Then the Eternal said to Moses, stretch out your hand over the land of Egypt for the locusts. They may come upon the land of Egypt and eat every herb of the land, all that the hail has left. So Moses stretches out his rod over the land of Egypt, and the Lord brought an east wind on the land all that day and all that night. And when it was morning, the east wind brought the locust. And the locust went up over all the land of Egypt and rested on all the territory of Egypt. They were very severe. Previously, there had been no such locust as they, nor shall there be such after them. Never been a time like this, in other words. For they covered the face of the whole earth, so that the land was darkened, and they ate every herb of the land of all the fruit of the trees which the hail had left. So there remained nothing green on the trees or on the plants of the field throughout all the land of Egypt. So it's talking about that area when it says all the earth. It was talking about where the plagues were hit. When it says throughout all the lands of Egypt. Then Pharaoh called for Moses and Aaron in haste and said, I have sinned against the Eternal your God and against you. Now therefore, please forgive my sin only this once and entreat the Eternal your God that he may take away from me this death only. So he went out from Pharaoh and entreated the Eternal, and the Eternal turned a very strong west wind, which took the locusts away and blew them into the Red Sea. There remained not one locust in the territory of Egypt, but the Eternal hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the children of Israel go. Verse 21, the night flee, darkness. The Eternal said to Moses, stretch out your hand toward heaven, that there may be darkness over the land of Egypt, darkness which may even be felt. So Moses stretched out his hand toward heaven, and there was thick darkness in all the land of Egypt 3 days. They did not see one another, nor did anyone rise from his place for 3 days. It was that dark. But let's notice, there was a difference made somewhere. But all the children of Israel had light in their dwellings. So God was making a difference to those that would be delivered. And he will do the same at the end of an age. Pharaoh called to Moses and said, go serve the Eternal. Only let your flocks and your herds be kept back. Let your little ones also go with you. So now we see in him, looks as if he's changing a little bit. But Moses said, you must also give us sacrifices and burnt offerings that we may sacrifice to the Eternal our God. Our livestock will go with us. Not a hoof will be left behind. For we must take some of them to serve the Eternal our God. And even we do not know with what we must serve the Eternal until we arrive there. Notice what Moses said to him. Even we do not know with what we must serve the Eternal until we arrive there. And it's the same for us. At the end of an age, we live in the present truth, brethren. God leads us Sabbath by Sabbath, holy day by holy day. And there's always some that want to know more than what God lets us know. God tells us it's like looking through a dark glass. but we can see God's plan. It's just like Moses told Pharaoh. Even we don't know with what and how sometimes until God reveals it. It's what Moses is telling him. When God tells him how, verse 27, the Eternal hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he would not let them go. Then Pharaoh said to him, get away from me. Take heed to yourself. Just notice what's being said, because he is sealing his fate. Take heed to yourself and see my face no more. For in the day you see my face, you will die. So, it's a pretty good threat. Pharaoh threatened Moses with it. Told him if he ever seen his face again, he would just die. Talking about Moses. Then let's notice what Moses said. You have spoken well. I will never see your face again. And he didn't. We know the end of the story. And Moses never did see his face again. Exodus 11 and verse 1, death of the firstborn announced. Turner said to Moses, I will bring one more plague on Pharaoh and on Egypt. Afterward, he will let you go from here. So, we can see that things had changed a bit. You and I know the end of the story. But Moses had been telling these people all down through time the time of these plagues that God was going to let them go. The people could already see that God had made a difference. So their spirit and their minds had changed from that first encounter with Pharaoh. Where Pharaoh took away the straw to make the bricks. The children of Israel had been shown some favor. As we see down through these plagues. They had to live through the first few, but then God began to make a difference. And he will do the same again. Well, let's go back to the story. God told Moses that he would bring one more plague on Pharaoh and on Egypt. And afterward, he would let you go from here. And when he lets you go, he will surely drive you out of here altogether. And let's notice what he's telling you. He's telling Moses what to do. Speak now in the hearing of the people. And let every man ask from his neighbor and every woman from her neighbor articles of silver and articles of gold. And the Eternal gave the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians. Moreover, the man Moses, let's notice, was not so in the beginning. They wanted to crucify Moses in the beginning. But now something had changed. Something had made a difference about Moses. And you know what? At the end of this age, God's people will be made to stand once again, brother. And there will be a difference made at the end of this age. Moses was very great in the land of Egypt. Some awesome change that took place. Let's notice. In the sight of Pharaoh's servants and in the sight of the people. Then Moses said, thus says the Eternal, about midnight I will go out into the midst of Egypt. And all the firstborn in the land of Egypt will die. From the firstborn of Pharaoh who sits on his throne, even to the firstborn of the female servants who is behind the handmill, and all the firstborn of the animals. Then there will be a great cry throughout all the land of Egypt, such as was not like it before, nor shall be like it again. But against none of the children of Israel, God will make a difference. There's a lot of death coming at the end of this age. And God will have to make a difference for his people, those that are called to live into the millennium. It's not so about the 144,000. Doesn't matter whether they live or die. They're already sealed. Verse 7. But against none of the children of Israel shall a dog move its tongue, against man or beast, that you may know. Let's notice. That the Eternal does make a difference between the Egyptians and Israel. And all these, your servants, will come down to me and bow down to my knees, saying, get out. And all the people who follow you. After that, I will go out. Then he will go out from Pharaoh. Talked about Pharaoh was in great anger when he went out. He was beside himself. And you know what? At the end of this age, Satan will go out kicking and screaming, brother, just like Pharaoh. He was kicking and screaming, and he was very angry. And there's a spirit being that will go out the same way and be put in chains for 1,000 years. And just as Pharaoh met his final fate, at the end of the 1,000 years, Satan will meet his final fate too. And then we will be free from Assyria. Free from sin, coming out of sin, just like God painted us a picture through the Exodus. To come out of sin. To know that there's a being called Satan. And to know how it all ties together and what it pictures. Verse 9. But the Eternal said to Moses, Pharaoh will not heed you, so that my wonders may be multiplied in the land of Egypt. So Moses and Aaron did all these wonders before Pharaoh, and the Eternal hardened Pharaoh's heart, and he did not let the children of Israel go out of his land. And we know the story. We know that the Passover was instituted. And we know the story. And I'm not going into that story because we're all very familiar with that one. But by this time, the children of Israel were obedient to Moses and Aaron. And after all that they had seen, they obeyed God and put the blood on the doorpost. So, will we do the same at the end of an age? Or will we discard the blood that's been spilled in this ground by our Savior Jesus Christ to deliver us out of the spiritual Egypt and out of Assyria into a promised land, a new age? We've seen what God has done. We've seen how God has taught us. We see all the truths, the 57 truths that have been given to us as God's church. There's been some casualties along the way. But we know the end of the story. We know who wins. And we know that the Passover was instituted for a picture for you and me. It pictured the Son that would be born, the Son of God, that would come and fulfill these scriptures about the Passover, so that you and I could be delivered out of spiritual Egypt into a wonderful time, and to become atoned to the great God of this universe when it's all said and done. We know God's plan, and we look so forward to the time that God will make a difference to all of mankind. It's an awesome thing when we think about the process of the wave loaves that we just went through during this feast of Pentecost. The wave sheaf that was offered that pictured Jesus Christ, and the two loaves that were waved on Pentecost that pictures this deliverance for the 144,000 to make a difference. To make a difference going into a new age upon this world. One government, one king, 144,000 spirit beings scattered across this earth. And it is a wonderfully awesome thing that God is doing. Jesus said that he made a statement. Would he find faith when he returned to this earth? And we look around at how puny we are as the Church of God, how small we are compared to this world. We can understand why Jesus would make such a statement. So let's finish up in Hebrews 11. And let's see what has been the stability of God's people down through time as they move through God's plan at different times. God tells us what sustained them and what brought them through it all. It's our time now. And it will require the same thing that it required of them. Some have lost this faith. Hebrews 11 and verse 1, God tells us what faith is. Now, faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. For by it the elders obtained a good testimony. Talking about the people of old. And it says, by faith we understand that the worlds were framed by the word of God, so that the things which are seen were not made of things which are visible. By faith, Abel offered to God a more excellent sacrifice than Cain, through which he obtained witness that he was righteous, God testifying of his gifts. And through it, he being dead, still speaks. And he does. It paints us a picture of who, upon whom the end of the age has come, brother. It's what it does. And he is still speaking to us, though he is dead and in the grave. And back to dust, dust to dust, ashes to ashes. By faith, Enoch was translated so that he did not see death. And we know that this is saying that he's moved to another location so that he would not be killed. And was not found because God had done it. That's what it means. God moved him, translated him. For before his translation, he had this testimony that he pleased God. But without faith, it is impossible to please him. For he who comes to God must believe that he is, and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear. Not a drop of rain had ever failed, brother. But Noah believed God. It's kind of the same at the end of this age. Nobody believes God except those that God has called. They think they can handle all the situations on this world. They think they can handle it. But we know that they can't. We know that if God does not intervene, there would be no flesh saved alive, as God tells us. By faith, Noah being divinely warned of things, and you and I being warned too, that the end is here. It's upon us. And Jesus Christ is about to return to this earth. Therefore, I name preparing for the kingdom of God that is coming to this earth. And it is by faith that we do it and we believe it. The same as it was for them. They believe God. Being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear. And if you don't fear, if you don't have fear to depart from the living God, brother, I just don't know where that leads. But it says he prepared an ark for the saving of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness which is according to faith. He was warned by God, and he believed God. Abraham, we know the story of Abraham. And it's about the inheritance, and it's about the heirs of the promise in the city that he was waiting upon. Same city that you and I are waiting on, the city of God, the city of peace, Jerusalem. And it says, verse 13, let's drop down. These all died in faith, not having received the promise, but having seen them afar off, were assured of them, embraced them, and confessed that what they were strangers and pilgrims on the earth. And it's the same way that you and I feel. We don't really fit anywhere. It's kind of like putting a square peg in a round hole. We just never really fit. Not in Satan's world. For those who say such things declare plainly that they seek a homeland. Just like you and me. It's what we seek. We seek a new land, a new home, where God and Jesus Christ will be there. In verse 16, they desire a better, that is, a heavenly country. Therefore, God is not ashamed to be called their God, for he has prepared a city for them. By faith, Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac, and he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son, of whom it was said, "And Isaac, your seed, shall be called." Accounting that God was able to raise him up. He believed God, even if he obeyed what he thought God wanted him to do. He knew that God could bring him back to life again, if that was the case. And he was willing to do whatever it took. So it's a good analogy for you and I. To raise him up even from the dead. So he knew God had that power. By faith, Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau concerning things to come. And let's drop down to verse 23. By faith, Moses, when he was born, was hidden 3 months by his parents. So his parents had faith to hide him. They were led to do this because they saw that he was, the better translation was, he had a purpose. It was in their mind that Moses had a purpose. And he was that kind of a child. And they were not afraid of the king's command. And so they did what they did. Verse 24. By faith, Moses, when he became great, I guess that's a better translation, refused to be called a son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God rather than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Moses was raised in Pharaoh's house. He had, I guess you would say, what we would say today, a silver spoon. He had all the pleasures of man at his fingertips. But he chose a different path. God says he's choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin. Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. So he knew about God's plan. He knew about a Savior that would come. And he knew he would suffer, esteeming the reproach of Christ. So Moses understood a lot. Esteeming the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures in Egypt. For he looked to the reward, so he understood the plan of God. By faith, he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. For he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith, let's notice, by faith he kept the Passover. He believed God. He saw from that burning bush and from that rod that changed into a snake and the signs that he gave him to go before the people. And Moses had faith that God would do what he would do. And he says, by faith he kept the Passover with the sprinkling of blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea, as by grace. Dry ground, whereas the Egyptians attempted to do so were drowned. By faith they overcame. That's how they did it, brother. By faith the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for 7 days. So it is the same at the end of an age for you and me. Jesus said, would he find faith upon the earth when he returned? Well, I can tell you this is the only place that he'll find it, in his true church. So, brethren, I hope you understand where God is working. I hope you understand where God is leading you to prepare for the kingdom that is coming to this earth in just a little while. It is like looking through a dark glass. And it's just as Moses told Pharaoh. We have to wait on God to show us. They took the sacrifices with them. They went out from Egypt with everything that God told them to go with. All the silver and the gold, the clothes, all the animals to do the sacrifices with, even though they didn't understand what they were doing. And they dealt with it as God led them through the present truth. God taught them as they went the present truth. He didn't give it to them all at once. He gave it to them little by little, starting with the Passover. So, brethren, it's an awesome thing that you've been offered. So take care how you treat the blood that has been sacrificed for you, so that you may live into a new age.